Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
FM. It's the 14th of March, 2024. Happy Pi Day. It's 3.14159, just for good measure. And it's always good to know where you are in relation to a circle, especially if it's a vicious one. So again, happy Pi Day. We need stuff to celebrate, especially since it's been like forever. It's been 4 years this week since the world got turned upside down. The COVID pandemic was declared a global pandemic, and this is the week 4 years ago that public lockdown started happening around the world. Airports closed, borders closed, and yeah, the world slowed down substantially. It's weird, Christine, going back through that, just, you know, thinking back at that time almost feels nerve-wracking.
Oh, well, this is actually the week I got COVID, was diagnosed with COVID, had symptoms. Yeah. Probably got it a couple weeks before that. So, yeah, I was very, very sick. I had a lower lobe pneumonia in both lungs. And they didn't even have a good test at the time. And it was almost impossible to get a test. And when you went to the doctor, you had to sit out in your car till the people in the hazmat suits brought you into the one room that they're using for people that might have COVID. So, and then it was 2.5 years of long COVID after that. So it was a very difficult time.
Yeah. Again, 4 years ago this week.
Yep.
But that was 4 years ago. By the way, just to be really responsible and really clear, COVID hasn't gone away. It's changing and mutating. We've gotten infinitely better at dealing with it. And given that there's massive resistance in society right now, either you've been vaccinated or you've gotten it, you've got antibodies in you, there's lots of resistance to it, but it's still around and it's still taking people. It's still badly affecting lives. So every precaution and everything you've heard people say about doing the right thing around COVID, we're saying that now. Okay, it's an exciting show today. We have the co-founder and CEO of Sitebulb, the web crawling and auditing software. That's sort of like a secret, quiet little weapon for a lot of people in the SEO industry. Big part of my personal toolbox. And Christine, I know it's a massive part of your toolbox.
It's one of the two programs I will never go without. So.
Patrick's coming up in a few minutes. Before we get to Patrick, we have a couple of announcements you may or may not have noticed, but there's a fairly significant core update happening at Google going on, and there's a lot of chatter in the community. Some of that chatter is about what happened last week with the manual penalties that got laid down.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm glad this happened, and I'm really sorry if I'm offending anybody in our listenership because they're suffering for it. But I'm really glad Google took this action.
Well, I think Google kind of created the problem too.
Absolutely. No question. Yeah. Google's created a whole bunch of their own problems that they've had to take a very heavy hand in correcting. This isn't just Google. I mean, Google created space where people could behave very badly, and people filled the space behaving badly.
Well, I guess I still think that's Google's fault, because if they didn't get search results and traffic, they wouldn't have kept going or create more and more sites. So I do feel badly for anyone who was hit as collateral damage or didn't know they were doing anything wrong. That does happen. If that did happen to you, make sure you get an SEO expert that does auditing, like myself and Jim, but not just myself and Jim. But make sure you get to somebody. But this one is hard, because I have not seen Google do this since Panda and Penguin algorithms. Like, they sent out so many manual actions for pure spam. When's the last time you heard of a manual action in the first place, let alone a pure spam one?
I've heard of manual actions, so I've never actually seen one. They're
Oh,
like
I mean
the ghost of
recently.
the boogie. They're the boogie
Yeah.
people of SEO. They exist, so no one's ever seen them.
Well, no, I've seen them, and I even had a site like 12 years ago that had a pure spam
You
manual action.
and did Google give you the notice and everything?
Oh yeah. But
Okay.
it was so rare. It's just so rare nowadays. Like during Penguin and Panda, and soon after, a little bit after that, it wasn't that rare. But I haven't really heard, except for schema markup, sometimes links, of many manual actions in at least the last 4 or 5 years. So the fact that they sent out so many last week, and
Well,
one
I
website
understood
did.
it impacted about 2% of websites in the index.
Well, no, it wasn't in the index. Those were from
Oh,
people
I'm
that
sorry,
studied.
2% of websites in a fairly massive study.
Yeah, Originality AI studied, I believe it was about 76,000 sites. And what they looked for was people that completely dropped out of the rankings, like couldn't be found. And they discovered that 2% of those sites were likely manual action, because manual actions were sent out and those sites were de-indexed the same day.
Okay.
So yeah, so they found out that there's more people suffering from the algorithms that are going out, but the pure manual action, remove your site from the index, was about 2% of the 76,000.
Okay, so let's take a look at one of the other findings from their study, which was, I believe, 75 to 100% of those websites used some AI, and about 50% used all AI. Is that not
No,
correct?
100% of the 2% had some
Right.
or all their posts were AI generated. 50% of those were 90 to 100% AI generated. So the other ones, the other 50%, had a decent amount of AI content, but weren't over 90%. So, but so people will say,
The
well,
inference here.
yeah. I had people argue on social that their argument, I don't mean argue, but their argument was, well, of course it's low quality content, that's what they're aiming at. And I said, but out of 2% of these sites that were de-indexed for pure spam, don't you think there'd be other sites that weren't AI generated in there if they weren't in some way trying to remove AI
Well, I mean,
content?
it's just super duper extraordinarily low quality content. Did you go visit any of the sites that were indicated in the in what was said to be the longest list of sites that got banned?
Just a couple. I didn't really have time this past week. I'm on a bunch of deadlines to look at them, but I trust the other SEOs that did, that said that they were pure god awful.
They were horrible.
Yeah.
Just they were
Yeah.
bogus. They were giving away
But
information that may or may not have been true, but probably wasn't true because it wasn't true.
remember, they've been using content spinners for years. So if it wasn't AI focused at all, you'd have a mix of sites that were doing AI content spinning or Fiverr writing
Oh, sure.
or something like that. But these were all 100% AI
Maybe
sites.
the bottom of the barrel has gotten a little bit deeper than we're used
Well,
to.
except that the writing from AI shouldn't be bad,
Oh,
right?
no, and all AI writing isn't going to be bad, but some will be. And if the web is being flooded, I mean, literally flooded with craptastic AI content, there's going to be some of that content is going to be, statistically, some of it'll have to be okay. It'll just have to be. And some of it will be god awful, just awful.
And
That's.
also, well, yeah, but it's written by like ChatGPT, so that's going to always write decent content, right? But my feeling is, Google, when they're doing these pure
How do you
spam,
prompt it?
didn't
Is a good question.
well, it's still going to write a good sentence. It's not going to write a spinner sentence. It just can't. It just goes by grammar rules.
And
But
then it comes down to how do you edit it? And are you giving it? And again, is it real or not real?
well, in this case, my thought is Google also has other things they say they look at for sites when they in helpful content, like page experience. So they're probably looking, when they manually review these, looking at other things, but they did get an indication that the content was AI driven. And they have now even added to the quality raters guide, which is for quality raters, not SEO, but that certain types of AI content will make the site completely untrustworthy. And it wasn't bad AI content. It was that the site that they used as an example said that they mixed in AI content, but they didn't identify which was AI content. So Google then said in the quality raters guide, this was the lowest quality of site that can exist. So they are, there have been multiple things from Google. We covered when John said AI content's an anchor around your neck, and because we don't want everything regurgitated that's already out there. And now we have, and the helpful content update has requirements that exclude AI. Just like I'm 5'4", so I'm not going to jump over a 10-foot fence very easily. So an AI content-driven site, based on what John said and based on these other things, you know, is not necessarily going to rank well. It doesn't mean it can't, but it's not necessary. It's definitely in a risk that you're taking. So I do think they're getting more and more definite about them not wanting generalized AI content. Now, if you use it for ideation or a draft and you rewrite it all, that's totally different because you're doing it. But I do believe Google is giving a very strong, they gave signals in the last like 6 months, but now they're giving a strong statement. These pure spam sites were all AI content, at least half of them were 90 to 100% AI content.
Indeed. And again, a lot of the content, a lot of the information they were giving was wrong, often contradicting itself in the article itself.
True. Hallucinations, yes.
It's how to say this. It's always possible to determine what is and is not AI content within a very reasonable to a very reasonable degree of accuracy, especially for a AI company.
Well, and as we know, when Gavin was here, because I see a lot of SEOs still posting, Google doesn't know what's AI content. They can't possibly know. We had Gavin here. Remember, he told us AI can tell AI content because AI knows what the next most likely word it would put indeed. In that sentence is. And if you have a sentence or two, it's not going to be able to identify that. You have paragraphs of it, and almost every sentence has the next most likely probable word in it, then the AI can go, that's what I would write. So that's probably AI. And they're not 100% accurate, but that's why I think, you know, Google uses other signals too. It's not just the AI content.
All the SEO newbies out there who are developing this blog content strategy that you have to follow, and you must post this like programmatic content over and over and over again, don't follow that strategy. It's not going to work. Even if it does work in the short term, chances are somebody's out there gunning for it. So don't use it.
I see people go, well, ours didn't get hit. And I'm like, well, first of all, today, this is a spam directed hit, right? This is if they think you're spam. This isn't just strictly AI content. But if you have one person said they have 4,000 pages of AI content, I'm like, if you have 4,000 pages of AI content, then there's a really good chance somewhere along the line, the algorithms that are now directed to exclude AI content are going to find you. They may not, but like Dave used to always say, the former host here I took over for, if you could think you can outsmart Google's, you know, 3,500 MIT engineers, go ahead. But probably better to go back and hire writers. And even if you use this to help with search-facing content, you can use it for other things that aren't search-facing. But Google doesn't need a regurgitated trillion pages of content. So they are starting to show definite signs of wanting to eliminate it. And this was like the big heavy hammer, like boom. And they took out pure spam sites so that the heavy hammer didn't take out like mom and pop business. But they don't trust that that's how they're going to stay. Because it used to be when Matt Cutts was running the show, he would pick one big name. Well, and that would get the boom, and then everyone would step back. And
this
now
is a little different, I think, Christine, in that there's a gajillion small names, a bajillion of them.
That's how I'm saying they're doing it now. They're doing this small, truly spam content, so no one's mad that content was removed. But I would be very careful if you're doing it. One other thing we should mention about the update. Some people have seen reversals. Not a lot, but sometimes, as you know, Jim, when an update rolls out, sometimes... Yeah. In the middle of it, some people get a recovery. So if you got that and you hold on to it for two more weeks, then you're probably good.
So. And incidentally, what Christine said, two more weeks, keep that in mind. And by the way, I'm not entirely positive it's two, it could be three, it could be four more weeks.
It could be, yeah, it definitely could be.
But more weeks is important here. This is a multi-pronged algorithms rollout in this core update.
Yeah.
And it's, you ever see like a PC computer go through a major update, and sometimes it has to download, restart, download, restart again, like in that massive update cycle.
Well, I
Usually
don't have a
5 minutes before
PC
you have an
anymore.
important meeting.
I don't have a PC anymore, so I don't go through that, but I remember when I had a PC.
So if you do remember when that happened, that's what this update is kind of like. It's happening, and then Google will infuse another update into its into its core, and then another update. We don't know when it's going to end. It will, Google says it would be about 4 weeks. That was about 2 weeks ago. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We got
And
time for a couple
remember,
more
this is,
stories.
oh,
We
real
still got
quick, remember,
Patrick's
I know,
in.
just, yeah, well, let's go to Patrick next and then we can go to stories after. But let me just remind people real quick, this is not just a core update. They moved the helpful content update into the core update. They're also doing a spam update. And then they're also doing directed, targeted, like the pure spam. So that's what we mean when there's a bunch of algorithms.
Okay,
Just remind people who didn't listen last week.
before we bring Patrick in, there's one last one I want to touch on. Just it'll easily work our way into the interview, and that's the patron saint of SEO, the great Google spokesperson John Mueller himself found himself banned. Not banned,
Yeah.
de-indexed.
By the way, he's back today. I just saw the story come by my feed. You wouldn't have seen it yet. Oh, he's
No,
back
I
today.
haven't looked at it. I did look at this robot text file for all of like 25 seconds before deciding I'm not doing this.
Well, okay. So I crawled the site to see what was going on. So I figured it was an experiment. So I wanted to see what he was experimenting. And he disallowed all his own pages. So that's why he was dropped from the index. But he wrote this long thing. It's on LinkedIn. Go to his LinkedIn page and read it because there's no way to summarize it. Basically, a story about robots text and how it works. And so basically, he was doing all these different experiments on the robots text to see what it would do. And then he explains what the results were. But that robots text was insane. I have never seen anything like that. I think it was like 2,500 lines or something. It was crazy. Yeah. So go see John Mueller's LinkedIn page and read his explanation of the robots text. Because it was just crazy. It was insane. But it is back today. And I figured he was running an experiment and he was. So
So he did it for clout.
no, I just think he was just testing
Just
things. He
to
wanted to
see what
show
would
people
happen.
how the robot's text works and doesn't work, I think.
Well, that was
And so
effective.
by doing what he did, he is able to write this long post. He got a lot of interest because it was so crazy, right? So everyone's talking about it. And then he wrote the long post explaining like like it even disavowed its own robots text, but he explains in there that that doesn't mean that the robots text is invalidated. If you disavow your own robots text, you just keep them from posting it, that it exists. So things like that. So he did all these like very weird things, but then he explains in this very it's the post you have to read for just how he wrote it, because how he wrote it is pretty funny.
I think I'm gonna
It would
have
be like
to.
something you would write, Jim. It's like totally like this crazy story, and it took me a while to even figure out everything he was saying, but it was really good. So John Mueller's post, and then a search engine journal has Roger Monti's whole explanation of everything that happened.
Well,
So that's a good one to watch too.
seeing some of the URLs he restricted, I definitely got to go read that post. I
Me
didn't go to
too.
those URLs because they looked slimy.
They were very slimy, but it was a very if he was trying to get people to understand RTs better, which it looked like he was doing, getting himself de-indexed,
That's
and then,
effective.
yeah, and then having that, because he knew somebody would find that. He knew somebody would notice. So, yeah, so it was called out on Reddit is how it first came up, so.
Okay, sitting in our virtual green room, we have the co-founder and CEO of the sweetest website crawling and auditing tool you've probably never laid your hands on, but you really should. Sitebulb. Patrick Hathaway, we wanted to have you on Webcology for weeks now. Christine and I are both power users of your tool. Welcome
Love
here, and
it.
thank you so much.
Hi, and thanks for having
Thanks.
me.
Hey, Patrick.
Hello.
Hello.
It's good having you here. And again, I gotta say thank you. I got two success stories that I would love to brag about. Both of them came from following hints or clues that Sitebulb had found in its crawl of two fairly major name brand websites.
Nice.
We're walking through this algo shift or period of algo shift just fine and feeling well informed.
That's so good to hear.
What got you into the tool and die business? What got you into the auditing business?
So we didn't start with Sitewell as our first tool. We had a product called URL Profiler. We launched this in 2014. I don't know if you remember it, but it was,
do
you remember it, Christine, right? It was a big data grabber. And it was designed that you sort of fed in a whole load of URLs. And this was actually at a time when we were going through all of the manual penalties for link spam and all of the Penguin stuff. And one of the main things we wanted to help with was automating some of the processes for collecting data about URLs in bulk to then do all these disavows, you know, and the reconsideration requests and all that stuff we had to do back then. And so we had created this tool that you needed URLs as a source for, and then it would go and get you a whole load of other data. And you could connect to Moz API and Majestic and Ahrefs API. And you know, you could bring in a whole load of data. But there was always this sort of sticking point that you needed a list of URLs or a source in order to take the next step. And one of the things that we did a lot was said, oh, well, go and crawl your site with Screaming Frog, and then you can take that data in and you can get some, you know, you can augment that data with all these other things that we're pulling in. And it was at that point we thought, well, why don't we just build our own crawler and, you know, we'll add that to URL Profiler. And that was the plan originally. And we started building this crawler. And then we obviously we were looking around at other audit products at the time. I was doing a lot of white label audits for other, you know, UK agencies, you know, as a sort of side hustle alongside the tools. And so I was using a lot of the other products, and we were just sort of like, there's probably room for another product here. There's probably room for something that does some of these things a bit better, makes things a bit clearer, so you don't have to sort of, you know, go through data manually and try and figure things out through spreadsheets, and like kind of identifies the problems for you. And that's essentially how Sitebulb was born. And we realized somewhere, so halfway through 2016, I think it was, we realized that actually we might have another product on our hands. And so we built it. We had a big long beta at the start of 2017, and we launched it in September 2017. That was, you know, we had a real nice launch pad from the existing product. We had lots of existing users who trusted us. And so we had a nice start, and then we've just sort of built and developed it since then.
I'm honestly not sure how long I've been using Sitebulb for years, for several years, but it feels like a sleeper product, one that SEOs, again, like I said earlier, this is a product that probably most people listening to the show haven't touched, but really should. How have you flown under the radar? I mean, it's so versatile and does so many things. How have you managed to fly under the radar?
I don't know if I would agree that that's how it feels from our side. We certainly felt until about, it was midway through 2020 that we started seeing Sitebulb getting talked about essentially alongside Screaming Frog whenever an article would come out that said, right, you know, do these steps, crawl your website. And it was sort of halfway through, somewhere through 2020, that we started seeing all the time, crawl your site with Screaming Frog or Sitebulb. Right, and it would get sort of thrown in there as the other option. That took about 3 years to get to that stage, and I feel like we're sort of still around there. Like we are pretty much considered like the number two desktop tool after Screaming Frog. Like Screaming Frog's ubiquitous, right? Everyone's got it. Even people who've got Sitebulb have also got Screaming Frog half the time. Mm-hmm. I guess that's where I would say we are.
I have both, and I'm, you know, sorry too much to friends over at Screaming Frog, but I do turn to Sitebulb infinitely more often these days. And that's probably because there's been new iterations of Sitebulb coming out almost every month or couple months now. And its utility is just, it just keeps expanding. How do you work through changes and iterations. What makes you need to make a change?
I mean, we talk to our customers a lot. We get people like Christine messaging us constantly, add this, change this, you know.
Oh, I don't do
Well,
You do so.
we get
I
feedback.
know.
We get Aleda collared us last year and sort of forced us to up our game in terms of what we were delivering from a response versus render perspective. And so we added a whole load of reports to that section. Oh, actually, we've got a webinar coming up with Aleda and with a couple of other guests that is in March, specifically talking about rendering. So yeah, if anyone's interested in that, please go and check that out and sign up. And yeah, you know, so a lot of it comes from feedback. We talk to customers a lot through either through support or we arrange calls with people, you know, if they have ideas and want to explain it a bit further to us. So that tends to be the way that we get idea generation. But honestly, we've got a roadmap that is 2, 3 years long of stuff that we could carry on building. Like we know we keep want to make the tool better, and we're certainly not short of ideas.
Like I can say, you guys, generally my thing was my sites were so big they were breaking stuff. So it was the sites that were the problem. So you guys are extremely responsive and helping add things. I'm pretty sure the like pause and stop your audit probably came from partially from me, I think.
Yeah, pause and update settings. I would have thought that's the sort of feature that we might have got from
Yeah.
you. And the other thing, you know, I mean, we had an interview with you, Christine. It might have been a couple of years ago now, about features that are still like in our backlog or ready to be built. Like improving the sort of triage feature that I still want to do. Is still high on our list of things to do. Like so, the biggest change that we've done in the last sort of year or so is the launch of cloud. And so that is essentially, we've always been a desktop product since when we launched back in 2017, like I was talking about before. And we essentially built a cloud version of Sitebulb that tries as much as possible to marry the sort of best things about desktop products with the best things about sort of online only cloud crawlers like, you know, Deepcrawl and Botify and those guys. Oh, it's not Lumar now, sorry, isn't it? Yeah, so we now have a cloud product, and that was a fair amount of work to get that going for sure.
Well, I'd say for those who don't know your product, I'm just going to throw in some things I know are super positives and then let you chime in. But like if you use Screaming Frog, and I do use Screaming Frog too, but I always have Sitebulb and Screaming Frog, and Sitebulb I use way more often. But some of the really great things in your product are, one, you have great visuals, graphs, and numbers that I can easily communicate to a client with a screenshot. You know, like this is how many. Here's a pie graph of like how bad your site's loading, and here's your time to first byte. And it's a very easy way to communicate with a client who may not understand if I put just numbers in there. And you can do that too. So the great thing is like they'll have a graph and then you can click on it and it'll also give you the numbers at the same time. And then I love how you can filter the URLs using regex, and you even set up the expression so it's really easy to use. So you're not actually writing the regex. And then yeah, and then you can add columns to your report. So anything that the audit reports on, you can go into the whole list of URLs and you can add all these different columns. Like, is maybe on that report, is that page indexed or not? Is it on there? But you can just add it. Or you can add your metrics from your CWVs or things like that. There's a lot of versatility in there. And then I love how it will also show you what the site's built with. So I used to have to go out to Built With all the time and get that information. So the site, what it's built with is there. It tells you if there's basic security issues, which are really important. And then it gives you this handy list of hints, and it'll show you what the issue is. It'll show you how many pages are involved. And if you're comparing to the last audit, it'll show you if it went up or down. Then they'll give you a brief explanation, but they also give you a link to a full explanation. And I can't tell you how many times, Patrick, that's helped me out with a client. Where they're like, I don't understand this. And I'm like, here's the link. Just go here and it'll explain it. So you guys explain what the issue is, how you discovered the issue, how the crawler discovers the issue, determines the issue. You'll give even images and resource links for people to fix the issue. So I think that's one of those massive benefits is you have all those hints inside the product, and then you can also go to the expanded version of the hint. So it's really easy for me to communicate things with clients without having to rewrite the wheel every time I do an audit, which is really, really nice. So how do you guys decide what to include in the tool? Like, I've noticed some changes based on some recent changes in Google. So I'm curious how you guys decide what to add priority-wise.
Yeah, it's a mix of being reactive to changes in the industry and a mix of like how we proactively want the tool to evolve. And again, it's what we're hearing from our customers. So like, since we've launched the cloud offering, it starts at $245 a month, right? And so it's a much more expensive product. It's more of a considered purchase for people. And so what I've ended up doing a lot more of now is sales calls with customers. And so I'm doing sales calls with them, and then I'm doing like onboarding and training with them as well. So I'm getting much more sort of direct feedback about hearing what problems customers are having, and particularly agencies. So part of the thing that they're trying to do is become more proactive. So they're looking to build out sort of monitoring type reports in Looker Studio that they can stay on top of their stay on top of their portfolio of sites. And so it's those, that sort of feedback will then go, all right, so we need to build a Looker connector, right? And so when we get that sort of feedback, what we tend to do is we tend to decide, try and make a decision ourselves about how many of our customer base we think will be positively affected by us adding the feature, right? So you can get customers that can come in and shout at you about we want this and that, and it could be great if it could do this and could do that, and it's sometimes they're just really specific suggestions that would only really apply to in a few circumstances, and so we're trying to weigh those things up, and then obviously it's if we can create features like with the cloud product itself, if we can create features that could create additional revenue streams from a business perspective, then of course that's something which we're going to take seriously, right?
Well, yeah, and one of the great things about the cloud product, if you're doing large sites like I am, I had a new Mac and it had a terabyte SSD, right? I mean, a terabyte storage. And I had it for a month and I got a reaching limit warning on my computer. And I was like, what the heck happened? And I had a 366 gigabyte file from the crawl on my computer because of the massive internal linking structure that they had. So the really nice thing about the cloud service is that you can do larger crawls, probably not that large, Patrick hopes, but that you can keep those off your computer so you're not constantly, for a while there, I was constantly running out of space.
Yeah. Oh no, you crawls. You can. We have customers going up to 10 million is about where Sitebulb taps out. That's pretty much the limit on Sitebulb Cloud at the moment. So we have a few customers that are up there with that sort of scale in terms of what they're doing, for sure.
Well, that's one of the great benefits about that cloud service is that you don't have to store these on your computer, so you're not taking up all your computer space, or you don't get notices from your cable company that you are now reaching your limit because I had that 2 weeks ago, because you surpassed your limit on your calls that month on your monthly data. So I think that's one of the great things that it helps resolve is just speed of the crawl, storage of the crawl, and then, of course, not using your own cable company or your internet service provider and running out of data for the month based on the size of the site. So those really make it worth it. That's a really great product. And I do want to say before Jim jumps back in that for anyone who hasn't dealt with Sitebulb, you and Gareth are probably some of the nicest people I've ever dealt with when I had a tool. I remember being up in the middle of the night and I couldn't get a crawl done. And I reached out to you guys and you like wrote back to me right away and helped me get it finished because I was having problems with the site being crawled. So you guys are just, I want to let everyone know, just an awesome team and just a great company to deal with because you're responsive and you're helpful and you have a great team that works for you too.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm going to second that. You guys were at Martin's conference in Bermuda. And I was having a problem spidering a site or crawling a site. And while at the conference, I believe some members of your team were working on the problem. And from that came, I think, another iteration of the Sitebulb itself. A few days later, there was a new version of Sitebulb out. I always felt kind of responsible for that, but you guys were amazingly responsive. That was incredible. Working with you has been a real pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, we've always approached support like how we would want support to be handled by all companies, and unfortunately, it's not a lot of the time. You know, like just the a lot of it is just being respectful and understanding what the customer's actual issue is. And you know, you can't always fix the problem straight away. You can't always go right, okay, you've got a bug. Okay, ta-da, here's a bug fix. It's sorted, but sometimes you don't need to, right? Sometimes you can say, all right, well, we understand what the bug is or what the problem is, and we will get that fixed. That will come out, you know, in a couple of weeks or whenever we're able to fix it. But in the meantime, right, you could do this, this, or this. And even if that means go and try and use a different product, right, we would just try and get the customer out of whatever bind they're in, because we know that they've got clients most of the time that, you know, they need to satisfy. So that is how we've always approached support, and yeah, it's nice to hear that it's sort of appreciated on the other side as well.
Oh, so. Very much. And one last thing, Jim, and then I'll let you jump in. No, you better jump in because I just lost my question.
Well, I was just going to say we're living in a really precarious time in the SEO community. We have the AI revolution just constantly unraveling and upgrading itself day after day after day after day. And this month, we're in the March 2024 MegaCore update. I'm curious, Patrick, what's your gut sense on, as a major tool maker, what is your gut sense on reacting to, again, the rise of AI and also major shifts and I guess in normal shifts, but in this case a seriously major one in Google or Bing's regular operations. How does that sit with you as somebody responsible for a critically important tool?
So I mean I don't think of this as hugely different to the stuff I was talking about before, you know, with when we had to deal with Penguin, when we had to deal with Panda. Like this, we as an industry have had to weather these sort of big seismic shifts every few years, that it feels like the landscape's completely changing, and you know, we all have to react. And so I view this current situation in the same way that I would view, you know, all those previous times. And in essence, when it comes to, you know, the sort of thing that Sitebob does, which is website auditing, right, it's how you approach the audit should be through the lens of context. It should be understanding what the site's gone through, whether it's had an algorithmic penalty recently or not. And you know, if you're approaching a site for the very first time, a really big part of your job should be understanding that context, because it then gives you the lens with which to view the data you're looking at when you're starting to investigate the problems and you're trying to look at, you know, traffic drop-offs or whatever that's happened. But that, you know, so that's when you're starting out. But when you're dealing with a website that you know have been regularly auditing, which we, you know, you kind of hope that most agencies certainly are, if they've been regularly auditing a website, what you have in audit data is a measure of stability. So if you look through the audit data week on week or month on month, and you can see that the technical signals haven't really changed, then that's when you can start to dig specifically into what other factors might be affecting the site, such as algorithmic penalties. You know, for instance, I mean, obviously, if you're getting a pure spam, right, you might need to just burn it down and start again. you know, when that's not the case and it's more nuanced, that's where having that consistent, historical data can really be beneficial, because it can allow you to understand, well, we know we actually haven't changed anything. Technically, there's not really been any major shifts from that side of things, so it must be something else. Okay, let's line up. When did the drop off happen? Okay, it's happened in line with one of these algorithm updates. That's probably where we should spend our time. And to some extent, you know, there's not going to be tools that are going to be able to help you with that. And it might be looking at processes and analyzing the content yourselves and understanding, you know, which filter you might have tripped.
You said earlier that there was a Sitebulb seminar on response, HTML response versus JavaScript render coming up with Elaida sometime in the next couple of weeks. Where, when, and how do people find out about this and other Sitebulb seminars?
Yeah, so this is the first in a series of webinars that, well, we haven't booked any others yet, but we're planning to do one roughly every month, through the rest of the year, and the first one is on March the 27th, which is Wednesday. Okay, I'm going to screw up the time now. So it's 4 p.m. GMT. So I guess that is 11 a.m. Eastern, I think. I'm
That
pretty
sounds about
sure.
right. 5 hours ahead. That sounds about right.
Yeah, although just having said that, it might be that funny, annoying period where our British summertime has not yet kicked in, whereas I think your daylight savings has. So we're somewhere around there. Yeah. So yeah, we've got a really, really great panel of guests. So we've got Elaida, obviously everybody knows. We've got Arnout Hellemans, who is very present
I
in
love Armit.
all of the conferences in the UK, and we've got Sam Torres as well, from Grey.Dot Company, and all of them. All Sitebulb users for a start, they all have given us really great feedback in regarding rendering. I know specifically from having spoken to them already that they have, it got firsthand issues with, rendering and indexing and crawling that they're going to be keen to talk about. So it should be a really great webinar. If you go on any of our socials, you'll see us talking about it. You can follow the links and get signed up. But yeah, so it's a couple of weeks' time, and we will be sharing some really interesting stuff about rendering.
Well, you said this is the first in a series. There's going to be more coming up. How often are you be how often are you going to be holding them?
So the plan is for once a month. I think the second one is not quite on that cadence yet. So we're just kind of getting set up with it. We had a new content marketing manager start with us at the beginning of the year called Jojo, and she has been all over content for the last few weeks and getting our content plan sorted. So yeah, we've got loads of new content that's going live on the site. There's loads more happening on social now, and the webinars will be running roughly one a month through the rest of the year.
Speaking of content, what's with the Fight Club references?
I mean, there's references to all sorts in our stuff. We have various Easter eggs, I suppose, planted through the tool, and more often on the website through the release notes. That's where I tend to have a bit of fun.
Your release notes are a thing of gold. They're
Absolutely.
hilarious. They're the best. You've never, if just signing up for your product for those alone are the best. By the way, I think we didn't cover something that's really important about your product, and that is, as a consultant, I often find that products are priced for individuals that don't need much of much functionality, or agencies which need a lot, but they also need a lot of seats, so they tend to be very expensive. The beauty of your product is it is not expensive, and it is does so much and reports on so many things on the site. So did you want to just mention briefly what your entry costs are?
Yeah, and so we have kind of tried to design our tools and our pricing to make Sitebulb a product that you can use kind of at every stage of your SEO career. So when you're first starting out and beginning, we've got a light plan that starts at $13.50 a month, and when you're a bit more au fait with what you're doing, and you're doing more regular audits, or you're working at an agency, or you're a freelance consultant and that sort of role, that's our pro tool, which is our by far and away our most popular, and that works at $35 a month. We also have a lot of small teams on the pro plan, because we make the additional users are only $7 per month, so you can have a team of three for $49 a month, and so we have loads of sort of smaller agencies on that kind of plan, and then we sort of jump up to the cloud plans, which start from $245 a month. And that's really for teams that are looking for collaboration or scale. And so, yeah, that does go all the way through into the big sort of. So I guess they're not quite enterprise, but they're sort of semi-enterprise level, where you've got websites with millions of URLs or really, really big SEO teams, sort of global SEO teams. So yeah, Sitewell can pretty much cover you at every stage of that journey.
Yeah, and also the really nice thing is you cap URLs, but like millions of URLs. So a lot of times when you get a SaaS product that supposedly audits, you get capped at like 100,000 URLs, which for smaller freelancers or contractors or agencies, that might be fine. But as you know, Patrick, most of my sites are well over 100,000 URLs.
Oh,
So
absolutely.
it makes your product so affordable that I can even get, I usually have teams purchase it that I'm working with. And then what I do is I transfer the database over to them, which is another wonderful thing you can do. So you can take the database, you can give it to the client. So when I'm just doing an audit and I'm not like engaging past that, I can give them the audit that I did with all the settings intact, and they can just rerun it as they do their fixes. So it's just such a nice product, and I mean, it's just so affordable, which is so important, I know, for all the consultants out there, because we can't carry $1,000 a month worth of, worth of SEO products, and your cloud solution is even cheaper than I think an entry level SEMrush for the most part when you get their full tool.
I mean, the cloud product in general, if you compare to the other sort of cloud crawlers on the market, OnCrawl, Spotify, Lumar, it's not even a question. Sitebulb's considerably cheaper, a fifth, a third, a half, depending on what price that they've quoted. But it's I can't, I've never been in a situation where we've been more expensive than any of them. So yeah, we try to keep the prices really competitive. We've always believed that, we're a small, bootstrapped, self-funded. We don't have investor pressure. We don't need to have enormous, ridiculous margins. So we try and make the pricing fair and affordable and sort of accessible to as many people as possible. And that comes as well with like how the cloud pricing model works. So we don't impose project limits, so you can literally have as many projects as you want. And we have really, really generous, total URLs to crawl limits as well. And we don't have this system of crawl credits, so it's more about actually how much can you crawl within a given time frame, depending on the sort of resource available. So yeah, we kind of take those things away and try and make it as accessible as possible. Sometimes it's more difficult to explain that as a value proposition, but we'd rather it this way around than sort of charging more than we need to, right?
Yeah, and you do a great job of that. You make it reasonable for everybody. So I don't, when I try to get my client to purchase it, they don't have to go through like the purchasing group or the approval group. They can get their boss that's like petty cash for them to be able to pay for it. The great thing about it is it's low cost, but it's not low quality. It's a very high quality tool. It does amazing reporting, and like I said,
Before,
it's one of two I would never go without. So.
yeah, before we close the interview, I just want to reiterate, I have yet to find out how far you can drill down in Sitebulb to get even more granular information. And it's not because I haven't tried. I seriously have. I keep drilling down in every report. Looking at like specific elements on every given URL, and I swear to you, Patrick, I have yet to exhaust the number of reports one can generate in Sitebulb using Sitebulb.
Yeah, I mean, there's that we when I'm doing training, one of the things that I try and say to people is, don't just press all the buttons, because you'll be absolutely overwhelmed with data at the end of it, right? When you go through and you go, oh, well, I have that, and I have that, and I have that, and I have that, and I'll turn everything else on. And so you end up when there's like, there's tons and tons of reports, and you're like, God, right, where do I start?
Well,
Yeah.
that is so true. You almost have to make a journey plan for yourself when you're doing deep dives using Sitebulb, because if you don't, you're going to get sidetracked. There's
Yeah.
just so much to look at.
Yeah,
Yeah, I have emails from Patrick. Do you really need this, Christine? Yes, Patrick, I'm sadly I do. But it is funny. Yeah, there's because there is so much in there to do.
Well, Patrick Hathaway, co-founder and CEO of SiteBulb, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your tool. Thank you for that incredible win that I had this week on, actually, oddly enough, on response versus render. Massive win for a name brand that I'm afraid I can't name, but thank you so much. I'm blaming that one on SiteBulb, or I'm giving that credit to SiteBulb.
Don't take it.
Really quickly for our listeners out there, how do people engage with SiteBulb? How do they get signed up? How do they start using the tool? And if they have an issue or want support, how do they go about that?
Sure. So yeah, firstly, thank you very much for having me on, and you're welcome for the wins. Very, very, very cool to hear. Yeah, if you just go to sitebulb.com, you'll land on the website, and the best way to get started is through our free trial. So there's buttons all over the website; you can't miss it. You can download that for Windows or Mac, and just give it a go. You won't get any credit card details requested. You'll just be able to start straight away. You'll get given a 14-day free trial from the off. And when you're using the tool, hopefully you're immediately seeing, audit data that you can use that's going to give you value. If you find yourself getting stuck or need some help, we have a help and support button at the very top of the software that you can press, and that comes through to like a little chat thing through intercom to us, and we can help you there, or you can email us on support@sitebulb.com. And that will come through to us as well. And then if you just want to chat with us, you can find us on Twitter at Sitebulb, and we're also on LinkedIn. So yeah, come and say hello.
And not only that, go check out the website, read to the website. As Patrick noted, there are a lot of fun Easter eggs in there and in the product itself. Patrick, again, thank you so much for joining us today on Webcology.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Patrick.
That was a fun interview to do, Chrissy, but I found
Yeah.
it a weird way. I found it kind of hard not to be gushy because, like, I really,
I
honest to
know.
God, value the damn thing so much.
Oh, I know. Same here. Seriously, I think it was 1 in the morning. I had an audit due. I could not get it to crawl the site. Not that their crawler is the problem, it was the site. And they don't expect this to happen for everybody, but they had been working with them for a while, and they actually wrote me a special version of Sitebulb that would bypass the issue that I was having crawling this site. So they're just an amazing team. They're so nice, and I guess it's hard not to be gushy because they
Yeah,
really
in a
are. Like,
way.
we're not getting paid for this, right? So it's like they really just are that good. The tool is that great, and the cost price point is so, like, just why not? Like,
Well, yeah.
anyone has $35 to spend on a tool a month, and it's just such a great tool. The reporting is so great. And again, I just love that ability to screenshot like a graph or a chart or an explanation or like how many URLs have this issue right from the program and put it into an audit. Makes it so much easier. And you can even produce PDFs of portions of the audit if you'd rather do that. So there's just all sorts of ways you can report the data. And you can download a URL spreadsheet for everything that's wrong with the site.
I was going to compare them to an incredible Swiss Army knife, but a Swiss Army knife is actually kind of unwieldy when you actually try to use it, and SiteBulb isn't. SiteBulb is actually quite utilitarian, quite user-friendly, but it's got everything in it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's just a great tool for auditing. And I would that's like if I was like, I'm gonna have $35 to do client audits this
Oh
week, or
yeah, jeez.
$35 for like my favorite food, I'm gonna skip my favorite food and make sure I have that tool.
Well, again, I don't want to put down other tools or anything,
No,
but
I
if
use
I
other
have
tools too.
$35 to do the very $35 a month to do the very bulk of my heavy lifting, or paying by the ticket, or quite a bit more per month to do relatively the same thing, it's a no-brainer, especially these days, where we definitely feel the economy tightening. It's a no-brainer.
Well, yeah, and also just because, like the lack of restrictions, like there's not a seat restriction, like I said,
Yeah.
$7 a month, and you can get two co you can use two copies, so I can have a copy on my computer, and then also another device, and also the fact that they don't restrict your URL. So most products, if they're SaaS products online, they restrict your URLs like 100,000, and then you got to pay. Oh, and you also have to pay for JavaScript rendering on a lot of the products. And that
Really?
comes with
That's
this
awesome.
product. Yeah, a lot of the products make you pay extra for JavaScript rendering.
What's the point
And
of having a product that doesn't do JavaScript
exactly,
rendering?
especially today, right? Because almost every site has a JavaScript issue or a JavaScript layer. But so they don't charge you for that. They don't charge you. The URLs in the basic product go to 2 million, but if you really needed to go higher, you could contact them and talk to them. So and most people don't have 2 million. I do, but most people don't have sites with 2 million or more URLs to draw. So it's just a really great product at a great price point with a great team of people who are really responsive and just really nice.
Okay, we got a couple minutes. We got a few more news items that we want
Yes.
to get through. It was really, I mean, again, that was a
Rapid
treat
fire.
having Patrick of Sitebulb on the. But you know something else? Sitebulb measures, of course, Core Web Vitals. You know
Does.
why Sitebulb measures them? Because they're a ranking signal.
Again, they were not,
Again,
and now they are. They never were, but they were, but they're not, but they are. Yes, they are
indeed.
back.
You
And
know
a
what?
small one.
I've seen the needle moved when you mess with Core Web Vitals. They are definitely have an effect one
Yeah,
way or another.
as we've talked about before, I think there's a devaluation factor. But if we want to be really clear, what Google is saying is it's a signal or a factor, because I kind of haven't cleared that part up, that's in the ranking system for page experience. And that combined with the other signals is weighted to improve or devalue your website based on how you're meeting those metrics. It's not a powerful signal, but it is a signal. And in the world of online competition, every signal that you meet well is a definite better chance to beat your competitor.
I had a client meeting yesterday where the client asked. It was a long meeting. We did a lot of work over the last few months for this client, and the client asked us straight up, like, of this work, what's the most valuable? And I had a really hard time answering it, because the honest truth is, the canonical is supposed to be most valuable. That was an index problem, but. The honest truth is, it all contributes to making a far better website, a far clearer and easier to access website, one that gives better information and gets the users from A to B to C to Z and out again.
Oh, Z is Z for your
Those to
American
Z. Yeah, sorry.
listeners.
You know, it all contributes to making a better site. I can't tell you exactly what is going to give you the biggest bang for the bucks. But I can say that all of this together has contributed to the rise we're seeing in click traffic, both in Search Console and in GA4. So you can't say any one thing. So Core Web Vitals,
Well, you
you
know, it
got.
also keeps your users on your site and it keeps them converting because your site's running better, it's more responsive, and it's faster. So
You
even if there
wrestled.
was no ranking signal, it would still matter.
You wrestled all that massive block of Java that didn't actually JavaScript that didn't actually have to unpack itself to defer itself to the end of the lineup, and now you got a much better first contentful, great, or
Yes.
largest contentful paint, great. Your site is faster and moves faster, and everyone's having a better experience. That'll get your rankings.
By the way, so we should talk about the one thing we missed on the not getting your rankings part, the pure
Oh no.
spam.
What was
There
that?
is an official FAQ from a Googler named Ryan, who is answering inside the help section. Barry copied the whole thing down because those could go away. And he put together a official FAQ on how to recover from a pure spam. I should tell people that the chances of recovering from a pure spam without basically redoing most of your website is going to be very slim. Sometimes people are hit by it by accident. I did have a site that was sending out spam signals, even though they didn't mean to. They weren't spammy at all, but the things that, like the way their site was designed and some of the things that they linked to and stuff like that. So we cleaned that up and they were able to get back. But that was also not a manual action. Manual action means they looked at your site and they decided you were not worthy and they took your site out of the index. And so you have to, first of all, you
This
have to
is
get an
hand of
audit.
God stuff.
Yeah, this is hand of God stuff. So you have to have an auditor that knows how to do recovery, because you're going to have to go through that site. You're going to have to make changes that are identified as part of the spam issue. Then you're going to have to ask Google And it's better to have someone who's done this before because we know how to write Google and ask for forgiveness. So basically, like, I am so sorry, King Google, I did not mean to do this. I made a big mistake, or I meant to do it and I have changed my ways. Either way, you're going to send that into Google and they're going to look at it and look at the work you've done and decide whether they're going to lift that action. And that can take weeks. You can submit and you can wait weeks. I had one site had to wait 3 months before Google lifted it.
And you can resubmit a bunch of times if you want to, but they got to remember you.
Yeah, there's no point in resubmitting if you haven't heard back from them. If they have not told you no or yes, do not resubmit, because now you're an annoyance to them and you do not want to be an annoyance when God is looking at your site, deciding whether you get to come back in the index. So you definitely want to have, so there's an FAQ guide and a search engine roundtable, Barry Schwartz reported on it. You can look it up on the site for this week. And it gives you a whole guide on things that you need to do to look at getting back from a manual action.
Now, when they say correct the problem, they probably don't mean correct that one tiny incident that you think might be the problem. They've probably seen something much larger, or they wouldn't have banned your entire website.
It's actually in the FAQ. Can fixing just a few pages lead to the removal of the manual action? Answer from the Googler. No, you need to address the issues across your entire site. Partial fixes won't result in the removal of the action. So it's a pure spam is basically like, you know, the police officer is outside the door of the store you walked out of with the candy bar in your pocket, and you're now going downtown. Like it is a hardcore, you know, you are going to learn not to ever do this again kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there were some people that reported that all their sites in their Google Search Console account were hit. So they said that they were just going to remove Search Console, and I don't know if that was a joke. But that will not help you. You have to have Search Console to submit the reconsideration request. So,
that's very silly.
Yeah, but there is a thing, and they did say it. Unfortunately, I couldn't find the reference because Google's so bad right now. But they did say at one point, if we find that there is a pure spam or manual action in your account, then we can look at every other site in that account and we can act accordingly. So they found that all 25 sites were pure spam and they removed all of them from the index. They had another GSC account where nothing got touched. So that can happen. And if you are a spammer, black hatter, and you have all your sites in one GSC or one GA, it's probably not your best option.
No. Although again, Google, how to say this, just because they're side by side in Search Console doesn't mean Google's going to ban.
No,
both
no,
of
it just
them.
Means they can review them. Yeah, it just
yeah.
Means they can review
them. They'll identify them with you, but it's all about intent. And that's what it comes down to at the very end of the day. And then if you are running a business where you think you have to hide from Google or you have to hide from the tool that's making your business really visible, maybe the way you're running it's the problem.
Unless you're a spammer and you know that you're going to lose your sites in the process, that's fine, just as long as it's not somebody else's business.
Well,
where
sure, yeah, indeed.
Or you're paying bills out of it.
Well, again, if it's churn and burn, that's part of the game. I mean, you're prepared for it to happen, and it's expected.
Well, not you or me, but for those kind of sites, yes.
Yeah, they're not offended by us saying this. Absolutely,
no,
they're
not.
They're
at
totally
all.
Not
yeah.
offended. This is the world they're in. But for people who are getting into SEO, and I've been seeing so much of this on Reddit lately, what you guys are doing isn't actually SEO. You're blog writing and trying to apply SEO principles to get your blog content ranking well in Google for whatever reason you're doing that. But that's not actually SEO. That's blog writing and using SEO to promote your blog. And that's really cool, but don't confuse it with the myriad of practices that are actually SEO.
If you're new to SEO, the thing I encourage you most to do is to look up Google Develop. You have to write Google Developer Docs because Google's bad at SEO.
Yeah, indeed.
And put in ranking systems Google Developer Docs and go read those, because that is how Google ranks a website. And they also have links to how they crawl and how they index and how they do those kind of things. So if you are going to be an SEO, that's what you need to have a basic understanding of at the least. And just optimizing blogs or I even saw a prominent SEO once say, you don't need to know anything about ranking signals. Well, then you're just not an SEO. It's fine. You could be a content marketer. You can be a social media person.
That's
but an SEO does understand how Google looks at a site. and what they expect from a site and what they want from a site. And you need to know how that works. And that's not reading the Quality Raters Guide a dozen times. That's going to the ranking systems documents and reading how they actually rank websites.
There's no shortcuts.
There's no shortcuts, yeah. And then getting in groups, talking to people that, you know, been around for a while because we've been through all this. If this is your first massive devaluation cycle, you've been very lucky because I haven't done it in a while. But if you find any SEO that lived through Panda and Penguin, they will explain to you how this goes. So those are pretty devastating algorithms. So, you know, there's one more thing, Jim, we have to cover before we close.
Yeah, go.
We did not mention the world's first major act to regulate AI was passed in Europe.
Indeed, the EU has sweeping. Well, I don't know if I can call this sweeping as much as I call it a really, really good foundation for sorting AI problems as they come along, and creating new levels of legislation again to react to problems as they make themselves apparent.
They are divided into categories of risk. So, if there are some things that you are not allowed to do with AI whatsoever, those fall under unacceptable. And then so that technology would be banned. And the reason this is important too is if you have websites that go into the EU, you need to know what the EU is doing on these things. So then they have high, medium, and low hazard. And all the technology will be divided into those categories. So if a category is deemed high risk, then that one will not be allowed to exist in the EU. So you just want to make sure that you kind of follow this stuff. And then they are going to assign all the technologies to one of those four categories.
So when you're looking at, and when you're looking for it, it's the EU, European Union AI Act.
Yes.
The first parts of it are going to be implemented in May, and it's going to be staggered mostly from 2025 onward. And this is good. I mean, they're targeting use of AI to create fake information. They're targeting use of AI to marshal the existing treasure troves of information on consumers. They're trying to protect people's privacy, and they're also trying to protect critical infrastructure in these legislations. So yeah, the various levels of risk outlined in the legislation is going to be interesting. How they outline risk, what qualifies for what level. This is something that all technologists need to be aware of, because it's definitely going to be affecting the world that we're moving into.
It is. And like, for one instance, Google, in an attempt to get ahead of this a little bit, is reducing election information you can find from Gemini. Because of the potential for hallucinations and incorrect information, they're greatly limiting that. And so those are the kind of things that could fall under high risk under the EU AI Act.
Well, also moving forward into, I don't know, November, I'm so glad Google announced that it's going to be limiting what its generative AI generates about the election, because, oh my goodness, if elections aren't, what was Hunter S. Thompson's term for an American election? Fear and loathing.
yes, and his book about Vegas.
Well, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail 72, and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. So Gemini is going to restrict comment on political matters from now until it gets around to commenting again.
I don't know that it's going to restrict it for a set period of time, just because the EU has their new laws and Google operates in the EU. It's going to have to find a way to make sure that it follows those two. So so we'll see what happens. But at least I'm happy to hear that they're going to restrict.
Never say never. Heaven knows Elon Musk bought Twitter and Steve Munchen is looking to buy TikTok. So, you know, never say never about weirdness that can happen out there.
By the way, on weirdness, Twitter, Elon Musk's Twitter X Fixer is going to put out an app for your Samsung, and I forget which other TV, to watch long form video on Twitter this week, next week.
So also, I think he wants to enable you to blast that to your television, to Bluetooth to your TV.
Oh, not even Bluetooth. You'll be able to get the app on your TV. It's supposed to be a YouTube competitor. But I'm really disappointed. I am disappointed. The first person he signed up to do it was a Mr. Beast. And
Oh,
I think
I always
Mr.
thought
Beast
better
has
of
a pretty
Mr.
good
Beast.
reputation. Yes, me too.
But
I
it
even
wasn't
tweeted
Don
him about
Lemon.
that. No, so Don Lemon was the second one, but Don Lemon and Mr. Musk had a very big fight on Twitter yesterday. It's all over Twitter, tweeting each other back and forth. And apparently, Don Lemon did an interview of Musk that he did not like. And so he has ended the deal with Don Lemon.
Oh.
Yeah.
If there's
So.
ever a dude that was set up to fail over and over and over again, it's got to be Don Lemon. That's the story of that guy's career.
Poor guy.
Yeah, poor dude.
But like seriously, like it was supposedly it apparently was a hard-hitting interview, and Musk was not happy that he didn't look the way he wanted to look. So never have you met a person more petty and small than with so much money as Elon Musk. So he ended it all. So
Okay, is there anything else we should cover? We're slightly over time, but that's
I
okay.
think
Apparently the engineers have left the studio, but they left the tape running, so
so we could go for another half hour. No, I'm just
if we
totally
wanted to, but we won't.
kidding. But we did that once. Not
Yeah,
that
we heard
long
about it. We heard about it later.
ago. I don't. Is there anything else we missed? I think we covered most everything that we wanted to. What people don't know is we have a list of stories to cover every week. So I am looking through the stories right now to make sure
Okay,
we covered.
the very last one I think we actually do have to cover is if you have given Google permission by putting your social media profiles into
Oh,
your
yes.
Google Business profile, this is how you've given them permission. You've made your social media available to through Google Business profile. Google is going to go spider crawl and check out your social media and make the odd quote appear in your Google Business profile. How that's going to happen, how it's going to look, how those quotes are going to be drawn, and are they going to be reactive to search query or whatever, I don't know. But Google's integrating your social media into your business profile.
As someone whose social media shows up for their name because of Google, I'm not a fan. Not a fan of that. But if you do it for your business, make sure it's strictly your business account because you don't want to be talking about something you don't want your customers to see on the first page of Google when they Google your business name. So make sure you have separate business accounts and not just the personal one.
These days, if you say something that is in any way definitive of anything, you've offended half the people. No way, you just can't avoid it. So don't say nothing.
Don't say a word.
At least if you've merged your personal profile with social media profiles with your business. And if you're using your business social media profiles, you really should be keeping it professional anyway, because that's what the professional internet is supposed to be about. We're here to do business, not slag each other.
True, very true.
Well, honestly, Christine, I mean, do you remember when this started out and this was going to be like the great business world, and it's turned into this degenerative like slag fest? The web is better than this.
It
And
is.
I'm
You
this.
sure?
I actually I like Google doing this. In a way, I like Google doing this. And this is going to sound crazy, but sometimes I feel like the more the world becomes a great panopticon, the better people gotta behave. Is that terrible?
No, it's too much for today. I wrote a whole paper for that in my PhD program on privacy based on Goffman. So that's a whole different thing. But there's one thing we did forget to report on today, and we probably should. Just because it's a vulnerability in WordPress.
Oh, this is
But
funny. Okay, go
it
for
is
it. This is
funny.
hilarious.
So a WordPress site builder add on a backdoor to disable websites into a plugin. And the plugin is actually a little bit popular. So not just the people that were his clients used it, but he created a backdoor to combat issues of piracy that he had been facing so that he could shut things down. So it basically created a hack into the plugin so he could shut down when people pirated his code.
So he was going after pirates, but to do so, he backdoored every website using his plugin.
Yes, and it's called Bricks Ultimate. It's an add-on for the Bricks Builder. And apparently it's pretty popular. And so there was a backdoor to put that in. I don't know if they've rolled out the fixed yet, but I'm sure if they haven't, they will real soon. So you have Bricks Builder add-on. You're gonna want to make sure to update that as soon as an update comes out.
No, he's apologized for this, like profusely and
Oh
embarrassingly, right?
yeah, he
Like
wasn't like
he's
a hacker
groveling
trying to
and
hack.
stuff.
He just was trying to prevent people from being able to steal his code, and the problem was he created a backdoor on every website that used Bricks
Yeah, the
Builder
method he
add-on.
used was the what he was doing was valiant. The method he was used was not so cool.
Yeah, it kind of made a problem. So, yeah. So, anyways, they should have it fixed soon if they don't already have it fixed. And you'll just want to make sure to update. Again, it's the Bricks Ultimate add-on for Bricks Builder.
Okay, that brings us full circle. We've definitely gone a little bit more than over an hour here on WebCology and WMR.FM. Recorded live to podcast on Pi Day, the 14th of March,
Apple
2024.
pie.
On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Special thanks to AudienceKey, our sponsor. And big thanks to Patrick Hathaway, the co-founder and CEO of Sitebulb. He was our guest on this episode. INP is part of your Core Web Vitals. Make sure that your website is reacting after first input, which was reacting fast. Rank well. You know what measures INP? Sitebulb does. That's what.
It does. It
It
does.
does
It
now.
does. It does.
Okay,
And they
so.
do live tests. They don't just do lights, HP,
Yeah.
Lightspeed, Lighthouse, Lighthouse.
Check out Sitebulb. Really, really, really check us out. Honest to goodness, some of you people, we're going to change your career. Check out Sitebulb for real. Until next week, stay well, rank well, be kind to each other, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.